Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Come on, let's get going now.
From KMOX Sports.
We're primed and ready.
All day, baby.
Man, let's go.
This is the Graybar Sports Open Live. Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Here we go on a Thursday night. We are with you. It is a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. Have you for the next 2 hours, taking you until 8 o'clock this evening. As always, if you want to chime in on the program, multiple ways for you to do so. You can call or text 314-436-7900. 314-436-7900. You can tweet at me at Matt Pauley on air, MattPauley on air. Or for those of you who are watching on our various social media channels, you can just leave a comment and we can respond to those as we go along through the program tonight. Again, taking you till 8 o'clock. We've got a couple guests lined up for hour number one. We are going to be joined by Bernie Miklas. He is going to join us in about 10 minutes. And then Sasha Kleschen from MLS Season Pass and Apple TV will join us at about 6:35. We'll talk City SC with him. 7 o'clock hour, going to be more of the opportunity for you to get in here. Anytime we do the daytime Cardinal games, day games, we don't take as many phone calls and that sort of stuff on the extra inning show. So we always give you that opportunity during Sports Open Line that night. So we'll do that. We'll talk some Blues hockey in there as well. They've obviously got a big one tomorrow as they play for their playoff lives coming up tomorrow night at the Enterprise Center. We'll talk about the Shifley hit from Braden Schenn and whether or not that was a totally clean hit or not. Doesn't sound like there's going to be any punishment that comes down from the NHL. Thought it was interesting to kind of hear the bickering back and forth that was taking place between the coaches. Like, this is what playoff hockey is. This is what playoff hockey is. I thought Jim Montgomery was correct in saying that last night was the worst game that the Blues had played so far in the postseason, and it was probably the best game that Winnipeg had played. So you put those two things together, and it turns into a loss. And now the Blues are just going to try to force a game number 7. And that's kind of what I've been... I didn't know what it was going to look like in terms of was it going to be the home team that won every single game. But my hope was that this Blues team could find a way to force Game 7. See if you're playing against a really, really good team in Winnipeg. Can you force a Game number 7? Can these young guys that are on this team playing in the Stanley Cup playoffs for some of them for the first time ever, can these guys continue to understand what it takes to be successful in the playoffs in hockey and force a Game number 7 and find a way to steal one? Like, I always thought that was the pathway to the Blues winning this first round series. I started to dream a little bit when they won that when they won the two games at home, 3 and 4, by such a wide margin that maybe they would be able to go back to Winnipeg and get one, and Game 6 could turn into an elimination game at home. It didn't work out that way, and I'm kind of back to where I was. Just force a Game number 7 and see what you can do. If you can force a Game 7, at that point, anything can happen, and that's what I would like to see this team do. I don't know if they're going to win this series. The odds are stacked against them, and Winnipeg is really, really good. But all you can worry about is the next game, and the next game is going to be coming up tomorrow night, which is going to be a really fun night in downtown St. Louis. You've got the Cardinals playing. They're opening up a series against the Mets. That's going to be about a 7:15 start. You'll have the Blues playing. That's listed as 7 o'clock start, so probably we'll have a puck drop closer to 7:20 or so. You've got the Battlehawks starting. They're going to get rolling at about 7 o'clock. There's going to be a lot going on in downtown St. Louis coming up tomorrow night, which is going to be a whole lot of fun. Like I like it when the city of St. Louis feels vibrant. I like it when there's a lot going on, and that is what it seems like is going to be taking place coming up tomorrow night. So that's good all the way around. Cardinals today, you know, if you've been with us for the last hour and a half, you've heard a lot of Cardinals talk during Redbird Rush Hour and the extra inning show prior to that. Just one of those games today where it didn't seem like they were en route to winning, and then the rain delay happens, and it very much seemed like they were not. You know, they don't hit home runs today. That's the difference between yesterday and today offensively. They did not do a whole lot offensively at all today. The one run on three hits, they score the one run in the third inning to turn a 2-0 deficit into a 2-1 deficit. But once you came back from the rain delay and you didn't bring Matthew Liberatore back, and all of a sudden there's going to be a lot of pressure on the bullpen to cover a bunch of innings, and nothing against a Matt Swanson or a Riley O'Brien, but those are not the guys that you really, really trust right now, and those are your first two guys out there, and the game just kind of got away from them. And if anything else, you got your split. You got your split, and now you come back home for six games at home, and you've been really good at home. So you try to continue that run that you've been on here recently. It would have been great for the team. I'm not trying to like give them a free pass on losing today's game. It would have been great for this team to be able to take three out of four from Cincinnati. I think it's valid to wonder if the rain doesn't come, would have they been able to get after Andrew Abbott at some point? His day was starting to wind down. Abbott finishes with 74 pitches through his four innings. So with the rain coming in the middle of an inning, the Reds get one more half inning from one more inning from a starting pitcher than the Cardinals were able to get. That's part of home field advantage, I guess. But Abbott, where his pitch count was at, were you going to get an opportunity to get after him? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. Again, it was mostly an off day for the Cardinals hitters today. Again, they just collect the three hits and the one run. But I think you can be content with splitting a four-game series. I don't care who you're playing. If they go play a four-game series against the Rockies or the White Sox and they split the four-game series, like maybe those teams are saying, okay, that's a series that you should probably find a way to win. But generally speaking, even with those teams, it's hard to win four-game series in baseball. It's just not something that happens all that often. So you take the split, and you were able to double your road win total, and you go from there and see if you can get on a bit of a run. Kevin and I were talking about this at the end of the Redbird Rush Hour. When you look at what's coming up, the schedule does lighten up at least a little bit. You've still got some tough teams here or there, but starting with this series against Cincinnati, I mean, after going through a run of the first month of the season was good team after good team after good team after good team, with the exception maybe of that three-game series in Pittsburgh. And I know Atlanta's record's not great, but Atlanta's a lot better than their record would indicate. You're finally getting to a point where you're playing some games that are against not-so-great opponents. When you look at what's going to be coming up in the month of May, yeah, you've got series coming up against New York, Philadelphia, and Detroit. I think those are the really tough series in the month. But outside of that, you're going to play Pittsburgh, you're going to play Washington, you're going to play Kansas City, you're going to play Arizona, although Arizona's pretty good. You're going to play Baltimore, you're going to play Texas. I think those two, that's going to be interesting to see who those teams are when you get to that road trip against Baltimore and Texas, because those teams were supposed to be better than they've been playing so far. And you just hope that, for the Cardinals' sake, that they don't all of a sudden find it between now and the end of the month. All right, we'll take a break, and when we come back, we are set to be joined by our good friend Bernie Miklas. His weekly conversation with us here on Sports Open Line, that's coming up in just a moment. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Have you till 8 o'clock this evening, a full program. It's been a long day. We had a Cardinals rain delay. We did Redbird Rush Hour, extra inning show, and now I've got you for another hour and 40 minutes. And I believe, do we have a city spotlight tonight? We do have a city spotlight. Jen Cease is going to be hosting a city spotlight coming up at 8 o'clock right now. Very happy to welcome in our friend. You read him, you see him at Sports Hub STL, also doing the Cardinals Territory Show with our friend Katie Wu. He is Bernie Miklas, KMOX Sports Contributor. Bernie, always great to talk with you. How are you?
It's all when we're, you know, we get to reunite like once a week, twice a week, actually, on Fridays as well for Redbird Rush Hour. Great to be with you, Matt.
Yeah, I enjoy our time. What Have you learned anything about the Cardinals in the last week or so as they continue to be a team that just is very inconsistent?
Yeah, and can I, you know, with your permission, because I'm not like disregarding your question, because this is very much the same thing. You know, what I did today, I started doing it, just trying to think about the first month of baseball. You know, just looking at their body of work for the season. You know, because yesterday was the final month of April, final day of April. I'm sorry. And what I like to do is kind of take stock of a team after the first month, because mm-hmm. it's a sixth season. It gives you an indication. And I would say this, and not that any of this stuff is earth shattering, but the starting pitching has been better than I expected. It's been pretty good. The bullpen has been, no question about it, a huge liability. The Cardinals, for example, last year in games decided by 3 runs or less, had a .560 winning percentage. This year so far it's .315. And the bullpen is a huge factor in that big change in fortune. The defense is one of the two or three best in baseball, you know, and that's backed up by, you know, whatever metric you want to use. And Walker's greatly improved in right field. Wilson Contreras has played solidly at first base. Páez is throwing out more base stealers this year. So the defense really checks out well. And then I have to tell you this, and I want to get your opinion. When I was looking at the Cardinals and where they rank in all of these different categories, the really big categories, runs per game, slugging percentage, you know, runners of a scoring position, batting average, all that stuff. Their offense is actually really good relative to the rest of the major leagues. I mean, the Cardinals basically have a top 10 offense. And the thing of it is, I know they're inconsistent offensively. So I think that I can only speak for myself. It taints my view of the offense as a whole. I sort of remember the bad stuff more than the good stuff. But their offense has actually been really good. And people will laugh at that. I don't know what to tell you. Like, for example, you know, my imagination, I thought the Cardinals, you know, have scored 3 runs or less game way too many times, right? Well, actually, it's happened 10 times, but the thing about the 10 times, there's only like three or four, there's three other teams have only done that, those low scoring totals, if there's only like three other teams that have done that fewer times than the Cardinals. So they've actually been more consistent than I imagined. So I don't know what your impressions are, but that's I was fired up after like doing some of my deep dive stuff to see, I think, a pretty handle, at least so far, on the state of the Cardinals.
Yeah, and just on a surface level, and maybe some of your numbers would prove me wrong on what I'm about to say, Bernie, but at the end of the season, if the numbers offensively are what they are right now, I'm going to be very enthused about it, because I think the overall numbers are fine. I do get that sense that it's been a roller coaster where it feels like it's all or nothing. Now, you just told me basically I'm wrong and thinking that way, and you're probably right, but I do think it feels that way. It feels like the reason that the numbers are pretty good is because they either score a ton of runs or they don't score many. And I also think it's a really young team. I will parrot Oliver Marmol on this, and I will gladly do it when he talks about him, this being such a young team, that there's going to be growing pains, there's going to be ups and downs, and I think that's a very legitimate thing to say. I'm just curious, does the consistency shore up a little bit between now and the end of the season? But to your point, maybe I'm putting too much into that.
Well, I don't know. Listen, and when I gave you that number about how many times they've scored 3 runs or less in a game, you know, you were surprised to hear, but I have to say it again. I was surprised to see that. But they've scored 3 runs or 10 times in their first 31 games. Doesn't count to today because there's only through the end of April. It's the fifth lowest total by a team in the majors and the third lowest total by a National League team. And it's the fewest times. They have fewer games of scoring 3 runs or less than any team in the NL Central. I swear to you, I would have made a significant bet that those numbers would be a lot, they would be probably bad, and they're actually surprisingly good. Now, that could change, of course, to your point.
It also I've been around baseball long enough, and I know you have too, Bernie, when you're winning or losing a lot because of one thing, when that thing gets fixed or when that thing starts to fall apart, the other sides do the opposite. So it's been the bullpen that has really struggled. I see it in the future that the bullpen's going to find a way to get a little bit better, but then all of a sudden starting pitching isn't going to be quite as good. They're not going to be quite as good offensively. So, and then at that point, you lament the fact that you had the opportunity to win so many more games if your bullpen would have just been performing at a better level in the first month.
I'm not just agreeing with you because you're my friend and colleague, but I feel the same way. I think the starting pitching has been a good surprise, but I also know they don't strike out many hitters, and they have had sort of their home runs per nine inning rate. I'm talking about their starters. History tells me, because I always keep tabs of this stuff, their home run rate allowed is like so outstanding that I don't think it'll last. I'm not saying they're going to start giving up, bombs away all the time, but I think there'll be a little bit of a correction there. I mean, for as much as we're all encouraged by Miles Michaelis, and listen, I got to give him credit. I don't want to be petty and act like still taking shots at him. He deserves some praise. But that said, for example, to my point about home runs, he hasn't allowed a home run this year. Last year, he allowed 26. So my point is, there's some stuff with that rotation that's a little fragile that could, lead them down a more negative path as the season goes on. But we'll have to see it. On the other hand, they get a good amount of ground balls, and they have an excellent defense behind them. So that means something too.
Let's jump over to the Blues. Tough loss for them last night. They come home needing to win tomorrow to force a Game 7 back in Winnipeg. Let's start with the biggest St. Louis sports story today, the hit on Scheifele. What did you think? Clean, not clean, a little borderline? Where would you go with that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to give the cop-out answer, but I'm not trying to cop out, because if I had a strong feeling one way or the other, I would say it. But no, I think it was borderline. I mean, it looked like Shen left his feet.
Mm-hmm.
And I, those things are always questionable to me, whether it's excessive, although he did get a roughing penalty. I don't blame Winnipeg for getting upset, but I also thought their coach was going a little bananas talking about how he's calling the league office after every game because of these hits. Look, Winnipeg's been hitting the heck out of the Blues too. I mean, this has been a two-way thing. There's been some vicious hits on Blues players, and I'm not complaining. I'm not whining. I'm just saying, I know that was a big hit. It was a borderline hit. I understand why the Jets are upset. I really do. But let's not act like, the Blues are doing these vicious attacks on Winnipeg that are beyond the pale. Winnipeg's doing some of that stuff themselves. So, I thought that it was unfortunate that he got hurt last night, but I also it was strange to me that the Blues couldn't take advantage of it. Not that they were trying to hurt him, but once he left the game, I thought that would make it easier for them to win. And they actually got worse after he left.
Yeah,
the Blues.
The two coaches kind of going back and forth at each other. It's fun, but it also reminds you that how much playoff hockey is like this. This happens in playoff hockey. These two guys are friends. They worked together previously, and they're going back and forth. If you take a step back and take the passion out of it, it's just, man, we've missed playoff hockey at St. Louis, and it's good to see all this.
It's great, and listen, the Blues. The thing that really bugged me, and listen, a lot of people, it's not like this is some big revelation. What really bugged me last night was this was a team that, had turned Connor Hellebuyck into a guy that just was, falling apart, in games 3 and 4. He got benched in consecutive games for the first time in 3 years. And I thought, okay, they're going to storm his crease and storm his, the slot, and they're going to put all kinds of bodies around him. And that's the kind of thing that really gets to him. And they didn't do it at all. I mean, well, I shouldn't say at all. I mean, they had 8 5-on-5 shots on goal in the second quarter. And they had very little traffic in front because they weren't forechecking. They weren't keeping the puck in. They weren't buzzing around. And I know Winnipeg was trying to put, more defensive help to keep in front of Hellebuyck, to keep the Blues out of there. They were boxing out very well. But that's not like the first time a team's ever tried to box out, you know, forecheckers or people trying to get to the net. I was surprised the Blues had no way to counteract that. I was just – the one thing they could not do is play the kind of game in Game 5 that would give Hellebuck his confidence back. And that's exactly what they did. I still can't believe what a passive game they played last night. I didn't see the urgency at all after early in the second period when Snuggerud tied it. And that's the other thing. Their 5-on-5 game in Winnipeg has been awful. It's been great in St. Louis. And the Blues stars, their best players, at 5-on-5 in the three games in Winnipeg, lost all three, they haven't shown up on the score sheet, really, at 5-on-5. I mean, Nathan Walker leads them in 5-on-5 goals up in Winnipeg. I mean, that can't happen. No disrespect to him. So if they get this thing back to Game 7, all of these guys that have been doing such wonderful things offensively via the Blues all year, they're going to have to pick it up. Or there's no chance they'll win that game in Game 7 if they get there.
He is Bernie Miklas. Read his columns, watch his videos at Sports Hub STL, also Cardinals Territory, along with Katie Wu. And Bernie, our conversation's being brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling.
Yeah, Saliga Heating and Cooling. I want to tell you about an exciting change. Saliga Heating and Cooling, you know, which of course family owned and operated since 1927. They still offer free estimates and financing options. They still have the best and most trustworthy customer service in St. Louis. We've been a Saliga client and family for 16, going on 17 years, but they've switched to Daikin heating and air conditioning equipment. And I know this is all technical stuff, but they use a different type of refrigerant, Daikin, which is used worldwide. So they're in line with like what's being used worldwide compared to some other refrigerants that have been banned in a lot of countries. So they're giving you basically the refrigerant in the air conditioning service, you know, even the heating service, where it does not contain something that they call forever chemicals. So it's better. It's better for your home and better for you. And that's why Dan Saliga made the switch. So they'll take great care of you. They've been taking great care of us for a long time. Take a look at their Priority Club. It's a maintenance program. And preventative maintenance that we have found over and over again can save you a lot of money long term. I mean, just recently, is 10 days ago or so, they came to our house for the scheduled maintenance check. They do that twice a year, and they found a little problem. And instead of, you know, saying, "Oh, look, no, we're okay. We adjusted it. It's fixed. It's minor, but we discovered it in time." See, that's the benefit of preventative maintenance, because it'll extend the life of your equipment. So I could talk all night about Saliga Heating and Cooling, but I can't. So I'll just direct you to go to SaligaHeatingandCooling.com, SaligaHeatingCooling.com. Thank you.
It's Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. We have you for another hour and 20 minutes, taking you till 8 o'clock. Nothing but city talk in the 8 o'clock hour. Jen Cease is going to be here for a city spotlight. We'll talk a little City SC soccer right now. Very happy to welcome on to the program. You see him on MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. He is Sasha Kleschen. He does a lot of work as an analyst on MLS 360, MLS Countdown, MLS Wrap-Up. He joins us right now. Sasha, thanks for taking some time with us today. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Doing all right. City SC, they were so close to coming up with a win this past weekend, but they're right at the end. They gave up the equalizer, and they end up tying LAFC 2-2. They get a point, which is something they haven't done a lot of lately, but I know they really wish they could have gotten the win. Did you see anything from City that night that looked better than what they had done recently?
Well, I think we saw a little bit better in the attack. Obviously, getting two goals, that's been the biggest problem for St. Louis City this season, is putting the ball in the back of the net. Not many teams go on the road to LAFC in the past 5 years and put up two goals. So that's a positive. You can take that. I think before the game, if you told St. Louis they'd walk out of here with a point, they probably would have said yes. Of course, in the fashion that it happens, with Denny Bouanga scoring a world-class goal that probably could have been prevented a few times along the way, they'll be disappointed with that.
That, I mean, that was impressive what he was able to do. It was like you just couldn't stop him. He found a way to get to the net, and you're just kind of sitting there in awe of him as he scores that goal.
Yes. Listen, but he's done that for the last 3 years. The scouting report should have said that on Denny Belonga. But then you also got to think to yourself, okay, it's in the 90-plus minutes. You're protecting a lead on the road. Why do you have so many numbers forward? Why is there so much space for Denny Belonga to run into? Which, if there's any player in the league that you're going to give space to run into that's going to punish you 9 times out of 10, it's Denny Belonga. So could they have fouled him along the way, taken a tactical yellow card to preserve the 3 points? These are all things they probably look back on in the video this week and kick themselves over.
Is that on Olof Mellberg?
No, I don't think so. I think it's hard as a coach to dictate what happens that late in the game. Things are going crazy. There's chaos. You're also down a man. That's on the leaders in the back. Obviously, with Roman Berkey not in there either, you've got young players. Somebody in the back has to say, guys, stay compact, stay in shape, come back into our shape. If they're going to score a goal on us in the 90th minute, they're going to have to break down 10 guys behind the ball.
Look, there's been a lot of changes with this team. First year for Olof Mellberg, much of the players, many of the players came in during the transfer window last year. They've added even this year as well. Does it take a little while for not just from a on-field X's and O's perspective, but also for guys to assume their roles in leadership and things like that? Is that something that is going to take a little bit of time when you are, when so many things are relatively new?
Yes, of course. I think when you talk about leadership, you had guys that came in last summer, but they were working under a different coach. Now they have to kind of reprove themselves to the new coach, to Olof Mellberg. They need to get to know each other. He needs to figure out who he really trusts, who are his guys that are written in pen in the lineup every week, people that he can trust and look up to that will speak to the team, that can relay his messages and things like that. So, yes, it takes time. I think they had a positive start, you know, defensively. Now they're trying to figure out ways to just be a little bit more dynamic.
When you saw the players that they brought in at the transfer window last year and how they finished off the season, I think a lot of people felt very good about where this team was at, that they could be a playoff team, maybe even more than that. And then this year it has been so slow going from a goal-scoring standpoint. Has your opinion, I don't know where your opinion was at the beginning of this, but has your opinion changed at all in terms of the makeup of this roster, if they have the right guys here, or if this is still a team and a club that is a far way off and they've still got to add a good number of players?
I think I can answer both of those questions. Yes, I do think they're a far number off from competing for a championship in Major League Soccer. And the reason is I see a disconnect between management and the players that they're signing not fitting into the way that Olof Mellberg plays the game. So if you're going to sit back and defend deep, which is what it seems like Olof Mellberg wants to do, you need dynamic, fast players in attack if you're going to play on the counterattack. And the players that they have are more ball-playing players. Toyshirt, Hartl, Klaus. These aren't guys that are going to beat people fast off the dribble, that are going to go one against one, that are going to go straight to goal when you win the ball. They're more players that need to have ball possession. So if you're going to play on the counterattack, you need fast players. I'm not sure that there's a clear connection between the players brought in the transfer market and the way the new coach wants to play.
That's really interesting because Lutz Pfannenstiel is the guy who gets players. He's also the guy who just hired the coach, and we've always been told from day one with Bradley Carnell going to Hackworth and now where we're at right now that, you know, the style of play more than anything else is being dictated by Lutz Pfannenstiel. And now you say that just watching the way they want to play versus the guys that are there, there's a little bit of a disconnect. How do you think all that sort of ends up happening when, again, it's Lutz who brings in the coach?
Yeah, listen, I'm not sure I can answer that question precisely. I'm still disappointed that St. Louis got rid of Bradley Carnell when they did. The team had an identity. They had a style of play. It seemed like the players were bought into him. Obviously, the results were poor to start the second season, but does that really great first season just get thrown out the window that fast? I think that was a bit short-sighted by Lutz. And then obviously there was success more in the second half of the season with John Hackworth. So then you decide to get Olof Mellberg. It just seems like there wasn't a clear plan in place from day one, since Bradley Carnell was fired. And so I think that's something that, you know, has to be addressed in the summer transfer window with perhaps a few younger, more dynamic attacking wingers.
This is a big opportunity coming up this weekend when you look at the handful of teams that are right in front of City in the standings as they still try to play their way back into a playoff spot. Seattle is one of those teams, so finding a way to get 2 points this weekend could go a long way towards this team starting to turn their season around.
Yeah, 100%. And listen, Seattle is a team that hasn't had a great start to the season. Most of us picked them to be a top two or three team in the West. And now they're dealing with some injuries. You know, potentially Jesus Ferreira could be out this weekend. Looks like Jordan Morris is out for probably 6 weeks. So listen, they've got an opportunity to go into Seattle against a team that isn't too confident right now, hasn't been piling up the results, and also is dealing with injuries. So, to go to LAFC and get a point, now if they can go to Seattle and pick up one or three, then the confidence starts growing, and then St. Louis can definitely be playing with something.
Yeah, we'll see what they can do this weekend. It's been a while since they've been able to get a victory and get those 3 points like you mentioned. Before we get you out of here, give a plug for the great work that you guys are doing at Apple TV and MLS Season Pass. Obviously, the game broadcast, but so much extra programming that you're involved with, and it seems like content is being produced on just about an everyday basis.
Yeah, we're doing a lot at the MLS studios. I think if you're not watching your team, which I'm sure everybody listening is a St. Louis City fan, when their game is not on or if they're playing on a Sunday, Saturday night, we've got MLS 360, which is basically our version of NFL Red Zone, where all the games are happening at once and all the goals, every piece of action that happens, we're bringing it to you live with analysis from the studio. And then I think the best piece of content we make is the Sunday night wrap-up show, which is the highlights of every single game, and then analysis on probably the four biggest storylines of the weekend and debate between me and my colleagues on the show. And that show lives on Apple TV all week. So if you miss the games on the weekend, Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday with a coffee in the morning, an hour worth of highlights, catch every goal that happens, I think is a great piece of content that we put out every week.
Sasha Kluschen, he's part of the team at ML Season Pass and Apple TV. Great to catch up with you again. Hopefully we'll catch up again and talk again down the line.
All right. Thanks, my man.
Very good. That's Sasha Kluschen joining us, talking all things MLS and all things City SC. We'll see. We'll see if they can come up with a win against Seattle. That would go a long way. You know, it's interesting to hear some of these things that are being said, and there's a lot of people when talking about soccer that are incredibly smarter than me on it. That's why I lean on folks to be able to have these conversations, and you can certainly get a very educated perspective when Jen comes in at 8 o'clock tonight and talks through things. But it was an eye-opening conversation that we had with Taylor Twellman a couple weeks ago, just talking with Sasha. It feels like from an outsider's uneducated view, because I'm not overly educated on the sport of soccer, where I can sit down and break things down and say, well, they're trying to do this, but they've got the personnel to, you know, they're trying to do X, but they've got the personnel to do Y. Like I can't do that, so I'm not going to lie to you and tell you. But when I hear people who are really smart say that, it's interesting to me, and it's something that at some point has to get figured out. Either if that is the case, either the talent that they bring in has to have to play more to what Olav Melberg wants them to do, or Olav Melberg needs to have the team playing in a way that more closely resembles the best way to play with the group of players that you have. And I've always thought about great coaches. Great coaches have systems. Great coaches have things that they want to do. But great coaches look at the personnel that they have, and they play to the strengths of their team. We will take a break. We'll come back. We'll still talk some Blues hockey, Cardinals baseball. We've still got now another hour and 10 minutes of the program tonight. Don't go anywhere. This is the Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
We do roll on with the program. Just a few minutes left here in hour number one. In hour number two, we are hopeful to be able to talk with a Battlehawks player, probably in the first segment. And then after that, it's going to be nothing but Carl. Well, you know, we'll get into a little bit. We got to talk a little Blues hockey. There's been a lot of talk about that, the hit on Scheifele. I've slowed it down because, to me, it matters if Shin comes, and I don't know if it matters in the rule book. This is Matt Pauly talking. This is not like director of something for the NHL talking. But to me, like, because Shin definitely, his skates leave the ground. He goes airborne. I can't tell you how many times I have like gotten to the video and just gone frame by frame, because I feel like if he comes off the ice, if he goes airborne before making contact, it's different than if it happens after contact. And to me, it feels like he is starting, like the body is starting to move airborne, but he is not actually completely off the ice until contact is made. Does that, to me, that's not about rules. That's about dirty or not dirty. And I think it's a borderline hit. If you're a fan of the Winnipeg Jets, you are obviously going to be upset with that hit. I think Blues fans can be upset with some hits that have been levied by Jets players. I never like to see, I'm not a fan of things that are borderline and things like that. I like the game to be clean, but at the same time, it's the Stanley Cup playoffs, and it's grungy, and it's not dirty in the sense of a play not being allowed, but dirty in the sense of the style of play that's being played. That's why playoff hockey, the difference between regular season hockey and playoff hockey is more different than any other sport. In every sport, it's a little bit different. Like in the NBA playoffs, the intensity really goes up. There's a lot more super high-level defense being played. In baseball, obviously, even the way the games are managed are different in the playoffs than in the regular season. Maybe football is the closest thing of something looking like the regular season of how it looks in the postseason. And maybe part of that is there's so few games in football that every game has a level of importance that these other sports that play more often, you don't have that. But it's just part of this is playoff hockey for sure. Part of this is playoff hockey. And I'd be interested. What are your thoughts on that hit? Feel free to text into the program at 314-436-7900. You can also leave a message or leave a comment if you are watching on the video stream. More after the 7 o'clock news here on KMOX.
Welcome to the Strike Zone, presented by Graybar. Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs. On the voice of the Cardinals, 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Back at it as the 7 o'clock hour of a Graybar Sports Open Line begins. It is a Strike Zone hour. We'll be talking a lot of baseball, but we got a few other things to get into as well, including the Battle Hawks as they are going to be back at. What a crazy night it is going to be in St. Louis coming up tomorrow night as the Battlehawks, along with the Blues and the Cardinals, are all going to be playing at about the same time. 7 o'clock kickoff tomorrow night over at the Dome. Battlehawks match up against the Arlington Renegades. And I'll tell you what, we're fired up to talk to this guy. He is a former St. Louis Ram, but now he works as the defensive line coach for the Battlehawks. He is the great Leroy Glover. He joins us on the program. Leroy, great to talk to you. How are you?
I'm doing well, guys. How about yourself?
Doing all right. What did you think from a defensive standpoint? The team got a win this past weekend against Michigan. Were you happy with the way things went from your defensive guys?
Yeah, I think you're always happy with the win. And I think as a coach, you're always trying to nitpick things and try to make games perfect. But at the end of the day, as long as you can win in this league or any league, you'll take the win.
Yeah, when you look at where this team is at right now, because I think Battlehawks fans are not used to, they're a little spoiled here early on. They're not used to the team losing a couple games in a row, and that's what happened against DC and Arlington. What got picked up? What got shored up going into what happened this past weekend against Michigan?
Yeah, I think now is not the time to really start making up excuses on why you did or didn't perform the way you thought that you should. Obviously, you got to go back, you got to look at the tape, and you got to make corrections. You got to do that each and every game after wins and or losses. I think defensively, the biggest thing that we have to do is stop beating ourselves. If we could just eliminate that right there to where you allow your opponent to make all the mistakes and you don't make them yourself, you put yourself in better positions.
How much of a challenge is it matching up against Arlington, a team that you saw 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, I think the challenge isn't going to be with familiarity, because you're obviously going to be very familiar with them. The challenge is going to be, what if they come out and do something new that they haven't seen on tape? That's going to be what we're going to have to be able, as coaches, come to the sideline and communicate it and get that message to the players on what we're seeing and how we're going to change it. The second thing is, obviously, you got to now, maybe we come up with something new as well that we haven't shown. You know, that's kind of the chess match between offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator when you have two teams that are very, very familiar with each other.
Do you enjoy that part of it, you know, specifically watching how a game is going? I know you love coaching these guys during the week, but you see something in the game where you try to address it and respond to it in game, and just the strategy that goes along with that. How much do you enjoy that as a coach?
I think not only do you enjoy it, but you have to do it, because coordinators, offenses are pretty darn good, not only in this league, but in other leagues as well, and they're going to change. They're not going to do the same thing they did in the first quarter as they did in the fourth quarter. They're not going to do the exact same thing the first time you played them as they're going to do the second time you play them. So you got to identify those changes and then be ready to make those adjustments very quickly.
Have some of these coaches been around long enough in this league where there are some tendencies, even the tendencies on what they're going to tweak from one quarter to the next or one game to the next, where you can start expecting some things where maybe it applies to Arlington because that's who you're playing this weekend, but it could be anybody where you're playing a team for a second time and you can sit there and say, okay, I know that this group is going to try to do something a little bit different here this time around.
Yeah, I think the real picture for that is more situationally. For instance, on the goal line or in short yardage situations, we think this team is going to try to do an uptick in runs at about 70 to 75%, right? Well, what if they come out and throw the ball in those situations? How are we going to adjust to it? How are we going to handle that? Are we going to be shaken up by it? Or can we just play ball and survive the down? It's just little times where, and the other kicker here is, which play is going to be the one to change the game? That's important, because you never know, of the 60 to 70 plays of a game, you never know which one is going to be the critical one. So you now have to make sure that they're all critical plays.
I know it's been a minute since you were a player, but man, it really does not feel like it was that long ago that you were lining up for the Rams, and you've been coaching now for a while. How have you enjoyed going to this stage of your career, moving on from being a player to being somebody who tries to help other players become the best version of themselves?
I've enjoyed it immensely. I mean, it's just about the relationships with the other coaches and with the other players. It's about being in a position of serving somebody other than yourself. And then it's about being a mentor, trying to teach young players different nuances of the game that maybe at that stage of my development, if I would have known it then, it could have helped me become an even better player. So it's just kind of a full circle moment and an opportunity to get back to the game.
It's different for you because you were coaching in the NFL and now you're coaching in this league. And in the NFL, man, it is all about trying to win games every single week. And I'm not saying that's not what it's about with the Battlehawks. It is, but just as important for some of these guys, it is the player development. It is putting them in position where they're going to get another look from the NFL. So you as a coach, that again, that player development, and I would think, you can tell me if I'm wrong, it feels like player development is that much more important here. Do you enjoy that part of it, and can you speak to the importance and how proud you are when some of your guys do get an opportunity at the next level?
Yeah, the example there would be, obviously, we have a 10-week season, okay? And so we'll start day one, and we'll start with an individual period, or we'll start with specific techniques that we're teaching guys. And maybe early in the process, maybe the first couple of days, they may struggle with some of the techniques. But then as time goes on, you know, week two, week three, maybe game four, they start to get it, they start to pick it up, and then they start to excel. And that's kind of what we're looking for in that process. It's not going to be easy early, but just stick with it and stick with it, and then some good things are going to happen for you later in the season.
What, you guys are all kind of training in the same area, and then you fly into St. Louis, but all the operations are based in Texas. So I'm sure you're talking with people all the time who are connected to other teams. What's been the response and the reaction from the rest of the league to the kind of support that's being given here in St. Louis?
Well, from our standpoint, we're going to enjoy it. We're going to hope it continues. You know, we're going to praise our fans. We're going to praise our local community. I think we're in a situation now where now not only do we enjoy coming and playing in St. Louis, but I think our opponent does too, because they obviously get an opportunity to play in front of a lot of fans. You know, 20 to 30, 40,000 fans in one place for a UFL game is awesome. We're kind of setting the trend for that as well.
Do you see the league growing in other markets? Like, the other markets may never get to St. Louis, but do you feel like this league is continuing to be on the rise?
I think we're doing some very positive things. I think from the standpoint of, you know, getting eyeballs on guys, the viewership is up, so that's positive. You know, the opportunity to build this thing, I hope it does happen because I think it's something that people need.
Yeah.
You know, this hopefully will be a pipeline for guys who have an opportunity to go to the NFL as well. And so the more we grow it, the more attention it gets, the more serious it'll be.
Leroy Glover, he is the defensive line coach for the Battlehawks. They are in action at the Dome tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. It's going to be a crazy night, all within 10 or 15 minutes of each other. The Battlehawks, the Blues, and the Cardinals are all going to be getting their games going. A great night in downtown St. Louis. Leroy, thanks for finding some time for us. Hopefully we can talk again down the line.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome. That's Leroy Glover joining us here on the program. Man, he was fun to watch as a St. Louis Ram for sure. And yeah, I know this is all about the Battlehawks, and I love the fact that we have the Battlehawks. I love the fact that so many fans are supporting that team, and a lot of that support, the start of that support was in many ways created by the fact that St. Louis sports fans wanted to show that what Stan Kroenke said about our city is incorrect, and that's been proven. I've said it, and I believe it, that as long as Roger Goodell is the commissioner of the National Football League, I don't think St. Louis gets another opportunity, and I'm not even convinced that St. Louis does ever get another NFL opportunity again, but I think the city's missing it. I do. I know there's people who are listening right now who are very anti-NFL, and I understand that. Look, when we talk about the Chiefs on this show, whoo, there is a contingent of people who you would think that I was setting the city of St. Louis on fire if I talk about the Chiefs, because they are not a St. Louis team, even though there are so many sports fans in the St. Louis market that love the Chiefs. So I love the Battlehawks. I love the support that the team gets. But for whatever, I know why. I keep seeing stuff on social media. You know, there's the things going on with Cincinnati and their stadium issue. There's always Jacksonville and their owner and Shad Khan having connections to the region. There's always people who throw stuff out on social media about would there be an opportunity for one of those teams to leave their current market. I would never want to see a community lose their team, because I know what it was like for St. Louis to lose their team. But I think most of us can agree it would feel really good for St. Louis to be an NFL market once again. Probably not going to happen for a long time unless something crazy ends up happening. But, you know, just talking to Leroy Glover, man, it just takes me back. It takes me back to the St. Louis Rams and how, as much as I, like, you listen to me, you know that I'm a baseball guy. I've always been a baseball first guy. I'm always going to be a baseball first guy. But there's just something about a team in your market playing on the weekends and how much that, you know, impacts your life and the way you do things, and you schedule your weekends around the games. Like, I can't tell you, my dad and I would watch every single Rams game. And if they're playing at 12 noon, well, you know what? That means we got to go to early church, because we got to be home in time for the 12 o'clock kickoff. And there's just something, and I've lived in other places. Like, I lived in Wisconsin before I was here, and obviously that's a thing with the Packers. I spent years living in Colorado, where the Broncos, I spent time when I was in college. I was in college in the state of Kansas, and everybody's paying attention to the Chiefs on those days. There's just something about the weekly appointment that goes along with a single game and it being such a big deal, and I do miss that. But I'm glad we have a version of it with the Battlehawks, and I'll be curious to see the attendance tomorrow. The attendance could take a hit. Like, I'm not trying to. If you want to go check out the Battlehawks, if that's the team that you want to go see tomorrow night of the three, you can do so, and you can find tickets at theufl.com. But that's a challenge tomorrow night for the Battlehawks to draw fans when the Blues are playing a playoff game, and you know every single seat in that building is going to be filled. Cardinals are in action. They've got a somewhat marquee team coming in the New York Mets, and then it's the Battlehawks. And it's just going to be, I'll be curious to see what the attendance looks like for the Battlehawks tomorrow night compared to what they've done. It's still going to be good. Like, there is a legitimate chance that the Battlehawks attendance tomorrow is going to be their worst home attendance of the year. And at the same time, it's still going to be better than any other team's home game this year. That's where it's at right now. that they get so many more fans than any other team in the league. All right, thanks to Leroy Glover for joining us. That was a fun conversation for sure. Always enjoyable to hear those guys who go from being players and trying to make themselves better to being coaches and really trying to make other people better and having that that spirit to be able to do so. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll jump back into the Cardinals. It is a strike zone hour. We'll give you an opportunity to chime in. If you want to talk through what's going on with this team, feel free to call or text 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. You can tweet at me, at Matt Pauly on air. Or for those of you who are watching the video stream, just leave a comment and we will see that. We've got more coming up here on a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's a strike zone hour of a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX, brought to you by Graybar. Graybar is headquartered in St. Louis, a great place to work. If you want to join us, you can do so by calling or texting 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. That's how you call or text. Tweet at me, at Matt Pauly on air, M-A-T-T-P-A-U-L-E-Y on air. Or if you are listening or watching, I should say, on the video stream, you can just leave a comment and we will respond to that as we go along. But we've got some time here for your thoughts on the Cardinals and everything that is going on with this team. You know, I got back-to-back text messages, which I think are actually related to each other. So one of the text messages from the 314 reads, "You are delusional." Thank you. "You are delusional. You've been saying the Cardinals are better than they have been for the last 2 years." Okay. And then another one says, "Matt, you stated last week that you believe the Cardinals can win in the high 80s. Do you still feel that way?" So I actually think those two things are kind of connected to each other. Let me start by saying this. 2 years ago, the 72 win team, was it 72? I think it was 72. Yeah, I was wrong. I was way off on that team. Like I did not see that coming. And it took me a while to accept that that's who they were going to be. So yeah, that one I got wrong. And I'm not afraid to, like, I say this all the time because it's kind of a badge of honor for me. I'm not afraid to tell you when I get stuff wrong. And I got that one wrong. I thought the team was going to be better last year, and I thought the team was going to have a chance to be in the playoffs, and I think I got that one right. They were an above 500 team, and they were in playoff contention for much of the year. They did not get to the playoffs. We'd have to go back to the audio tape. Maybe you can find where I said it. But I never was like so sure that they were going to be a playoff team last year. It was a disappointing year, even though they were a winning team. It was a disappointing year because they had set the standard as them being a playoff team. So now that brings us to this year and my quote unquote delusion and whether or not the Cardinals, if I'm saying the Cardinals are better than they actually are, and whether or not they can be a team in the high 80s. I think the ceiling for this team is like 86, 87, 88 wins. I have a really hard time believing that they can get to 90. So that, I think the absolute everything is going right and they go on some legit runs during the season. That's where it is. And maybe I'd come back off that a little bit because we're a month into the season and everything hasn't gone right. Right? Like, the bullpen in its current form and at its current production level does not lend itself to being a team that's going to go win that number of games. I also, and this is where I think sometimes people hear what I say and they selectively hear what I say. And it's not that I'm trying to talk out of both sides of my mouth. It's that I'm trying to assess the situation in a fair and somewhat borderline educated way. And I still think the floor for this team is it's a pretty low floor, right? Like, if the ceiling is 87, 88 wins, what's the floor? And the floor is clearly this team being below 500. I don't think they're going to be as bad as they were a couple years ago. I don't think it's a 72 win team, but is there a possibility for 75, 76, 77 wins? Yeah, I think that's possible, and that's probably that might be a fourth place finish. I don't think they're going to finish last in the division this year, but they could be anywhere from, you know, I think second to fourth, outside shot of them winning the division. But legitimately, you look at them and see where they're going to be. And so, no, I don't think I'm delusional. I think I'm fair. I think I can sit here. This is a team. If I want to argue from a positive standpoint, right? So let's go to the positive side of things. This is a team that's got a team batting average right now, and I know I hate using batting average. That's not a number I use very often, but it's a good example right now. This is a team that's got the fifth best team batting average in Major League Baseball at .256. They've got their OPS is in the top 10. There's a lot of offensive numbers that put them in the top 10 of offense. And what was the problem with this team last year? They couldn't score runs. They just could not score runs. So when I see what they are doing from an offensive standpoint, it actually makes me feel pretty good and pretty excited about what this team could do if they bring some other things together. I've enjoyed watching the starting pitching. Call me cynical. I'd love to be wrong on this one. I do think at some point the starting pitching starts to fall off a little bit because you look at who's doing it. But at the same time, you leave open the possibility that it could continue. Right now, where this team is at, I don't think they're at a crossroads quite yet. But right now, for this team, the area that has to be better for them to find the upper end of whatever they're, you know, be towards their ceiling, it continues to be connected to relief pitching. And look, every year, like let's take today's game, for example. You go out and it's kind of tight for a little bit, and then Cincinnati starts to score some add-on runs, and you end up losing by a 9-1 score. Okay. That game was probably going to be a loss almost no matter what. Would have it looked a little bit different had it not rained? Yeah, obviously, Matthew Liberatore is giving you at least two more innings, maybe three more innings. Who knows? Maybe four more. Probably two to three more innings that you're going to get from Liberatore. So the game looks different. Matt Swanson is not coming into the game when it's still a really tight game. It looks different. The rain today, I don't always say this about rain delays. The rain delay today impacted the game. I'm not willing to say the rain delay switched it from being a Cardinals win to a Cardinals loss, but the rain absolutely did change the way today's game played out. If you've got a bullpen group that you can more rely on, this game might look different where you're stuck without Matthew Liberatore, and yeah, you're not going to go to your A guys. You're not going to Leahy. You're not going to Maton. Obviously, you're not going to Helsley. But that next group of guys, that they're individuals that you can really rely on. And there are teams out there, you know, bullpens can be really volatile in most teams. The final guy in the bullpen, the guy who's taken the final roster spot, or the guy that's taken the final couple roster spots. There are a lot of teams in baseball that are just churning those guys through. But if you've got a group where you're really able to trust those guys, those end of the roster kind of guys, well then stuff starts to look different. And I'm not trying to blame Matt Swanson on this at all. I'm glad they're pitching him finally. But Swanson comes in, and he promptly gives up a couple runs, and all of a sudden this goes from a one-run game to a three-run game, and then things just kind of go down from there. Now, the bottom line is the Cardinals didn't hit enough today. I think that's the other side of this, is if you face off against their starter, Abbott, for a little bit longer, you might have had another opportunity. You had forced him to throw a good number of pitches. He had thrown 74 pitches through four innings. So his day was probably starting to come to an end. If you catch him at the end of the day and score a run or two, then the entire feeling of this game starts to look a little bit different. So I'm just kind of spewing on right now about this team. The bottom line is the bullpen's got to be better, and it has to be deeper. I think that's the more important thing right now. I feel very good about this team when Kyle Leahy comes on to pitch. I feel really good when Phil Maton comes on to pitch. I feel really good when Ryan Helsley comes on to pitch. I feel really good when Steven Matz is not in the rotation and when he comes on to pitch. But whoever that that next guy, who is it? I don't know if it's JoJo Romero. I don't know if it's John King. I don't know who that next guy is, but there's the line right there. And that's where things have to get better. It can't just be four guys that you rely on. You think about last year's team and who you could rely on. Obviously, those final three innings last year being covered by Helsley and Romero and Kittredge, but Ryan Fernandez last year gave you great innings. King was pretty darn good last year, especially as the season went along. Kyle Leahy, he wasn't asked all the time to pitch in high leverage spots last year, but when they were in a spot where they needed him to, he was able to come in and he was able to produce. And there's a bunch of, I'm not even naming every single guy who was given that opportunity last year and who was able to pitch. And that's what they have to start getting. You know, probably the most important thing right now for this team from a relief standpoint is get Ryan Fernandez right. If he can get down to Memphis and if he can work on some things and he can fix things and if he can get some pitch shapes back where they're supposed to be and have his arm doing what it was doing for most of last season, and then you add, that's your first piece that you kind of add back in to your leverage group, and then you work, hopefully you get another guy and another guy and another guy. That's going to be the thing. So I didn't mean to turn this this question about whether or not I think they can win in the high 80s, which I don't think is off the table quite yet, even if that's not the number that I would go with. I didn't mean to turn that into a conversation about the bullpen, but where I'm at with this team right now, I'm so content with who they are offensively from a big picture standpoint, not content with the variable nature of what they're doing offensively, ups, downs, roller coasters, sometimes scoring a lot, sometimes scoring not many, but taking a step back and looking at the numbers in the aggregate, very comfortable with that, very comfortable with starting pitching. This team is a really good bullpen away from being a pretty legitimate team, and a team I think that most of us would feel like can be, at the very least, a playoff contender. 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. That's how you call. That's how you text. You can tweet at me, at Matt Pauly on air. Would love for you to leave a message if you are watching on the video stream as well. We've got more in a moment. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. Back out on KMOX, it is a Graybar Sports Open Line, a strike zone hour of a Graybar Sports Open Line. What's on deck is sponsored by Chesterfield Fence and Deck, the sign you have the very best. ChesterfieldFence.com. Cardinals and Mets opening up a three-game series tomorrow night at Busch Stadium. Sonny Gray is going to pitch the opener against Clay Holmes, a 7:15 first pitch tomorrow. That means coverage begins at 6:20. Cardinals will also send Eric Fetty and Andre Pallante to the mound before all is said and done over the course of the three games. Would be great if they could find a way to win two of three from a really, really good Mets team. Obviously, they have played well at home this season. So we'll see what they're able to do over the course of the weekend. 7:15 tomorrow night, 1:15 coming up on Saturday, 1:15 on Sunday as well. Lots of great promotions this weekend. They've got the Brendan Donovan bobblehead, the Brendan Donovan headband for kids. They've got the bucket hat, which is reversible. They're doing that tomorrow to go along with the great. So if you get like the theme ticket, it's a Grateful Dead theme ticket. You can get like a warm-up jacket that's got a Grateful Dead theme. And then one of the two designs of the bucket hat goes quite well with the jacket. So they're trying to help you with your stylistic choices there with the giveaways and the different theme nights that are going on. All right, credit, by the way, because I just saw this on Twitter a little while ago, at Redbird Farmhand tweeted this out. So not an original thought by me, but something that's worth talking about. It's also, I'm going to talk. Sometimes, and I myself included, sometimes we get a little bit too excited about the prospects, about the guys coming up, about the rankings and the things like that. But Kyle Sixt is here. Kyle, this Twitter account, at Redbird Farmhand, makes a very good point. ESPN just redid their rankings of players in the Cardinal system. And I'm not so worried about where guys are ranked. I'm worried about the movement. So I need some explanation on a few things. Okay, so J.J. Weatherholt was number one. He stays number one. We can be good with that?
Yeah, I would assume so.
Okay. Number two, Tink Hintz. And he moved up a spot. What has Tink Hintz done to move up a spot in the Cardinals prospect rankings here recently?
Well, considering he hasn't been pitching, that's pretty interesting. Who moved below him?
We'll get to that. Don't worry.
See who's next.
Don't worry. We will get to that because the person that moved down,
I assume, would be Quinn Matthews.
Yes, it was Quinn Matthews who moves down from number two to number three. So you can say, well, he's been injured. But if you're going to say that about Quinn Matthews, then it goes back to the guy who's at number two in Tink Hintz, who has also been injured. And I'm not trying to dismiss Tink Hintz. I like Tink Hintz potentially as a reliever more so than a starter. His path to becoming a starting pitcher in the big leagues, I think, is getting more and more daunting by the days that he spends on the injured list, because he's not getting the innings that he needs to get his arm to a point where he can be a starter in the big league. So if I'm making that decision, I'm trying to get him to the big league sooner than later as a relief pitcher. But they're redoing it. He was not effective even before he got injured because they're redoing a bunch of things. But yeah, Hintz moves up a spot. Matthews moves down a spot. They're both injured. I think Matthews is probably going to be back sooner than Hintz if I have that one right. And Matthews was being very effective before the injury. So I don't understand any of this.
Yeah, and we saw Quinn Matthews in spring training. If there was anything that we could take from 2025, it's the fact that Quinn Matthews can compete with major leaguers.
Yeah, yeah. So those are the ones I don't really understand. Jimmy Crooks moves up a few spots. He goes to number four. That one makes sense. Ronel Rodriguez, another catcher. He was not ranked. He goes to the number five spot.
Wow.
So that's a big, big jump for him. Yairo Patillo stays at number six. Leonardo Bernal, he falls. He goes from four to seven. Cooper Jerpy falls. He goes from five to eight. You would think that has to do with injury, but makes you wonder why Tink Hintz moves up. So JC goes eight to nine. Chase Davis goes from being not ranked to number 10.
I was going to ask about Chase Davis. Yeah. Where do we have TK Roby?
This is only a top 10 that I see
here. Okay.
So I don't know. I'm just taking the screenshot off of this Redbird Farmhands Twitter. I just saw this and I thought it was interesting. Mm-hmm. But again, look, am I really going to be upset that Tink Hintz moved up a spot and Quinn Matthews moved down a spot? No, that's not something to be worried about. But what it does tell you is some of these people who do the minor league prospecting are really good. Really good, and they get things right more often than not. And then some of the things out there are not really good. And as much as we want to always be excited about what's coming up, sometimes you take with a grain of salt some of the things that you see.
You got to. I mean, you look back on former or years past top prospects list, and it's some of these hit and some of these we couldn't have been more wrong on. So you just got to see them at the major league level. That's the only thing that will tell you.
Maybe I'm wrong on this, and maybe I'm a prisoner of the moment, because Lord knows I can be that. But to me, the one thing that I've noticed happening in the last, I'll say 10 years. In the last, 10 years ago, I felt like you could have a top-ranked, number one prospect over baseball, before MLB Pipeline existed, before all these other things existed, you could have the number one prospect in all of baseball, and that guy might not make it. Where now it feels like there are clear can't-miss guys. And I don't know if the industry's just gotten better at evaluating them. I don't know if the process for developing players, both in the minor leagues, at the college level, at the the showcase level, if it's just better now, so you've got more information on guys. Obviously, from a technology standpoint, we know from pitchers, we're putting these guys in pitching labs where we know what their spin rate is, we know all these things about them, we know what the exit velocity is on these hitters coming through. So there's obviously more data, and when you have more data, you have more information. So that's probably the answer to the question. But I think that's been the one major change that I've noticed when it comes to the super upper echelon, the tier of prospect that is just there is that can't miss. And I think J.J. Weatherholt is on the verge of being not can't miss, this guy's going to be in the Hall of Fame, but can't miss, this guy's going to be a pretty darn good big leaguer.
For sure. And before that year in 2024, Weatherholt was regarded as the top prospect in the draft before that spring season started. And I have to agree. I think it's just we know so much about these prospects that you know almost who's number one, who's number two, or in the past you didn't have that.
I can argue against something you just said, though, and it goes back to J.J. Weatherholt, because out of high school, and again, these guys are being evaluated just sometimes more at high school. Like some of these baseball academies out there, there are technologies that the Cardinals do not have right now that hopefully they will have as they redo everything down at the spring training facility. There are technologies that they do not have that some of these baseball academies that youth players are using do have. So like a J.J. Weatherholt's a really interesting thing because coming out of high school, he was not regarded as well. West Virginia kind of just gave him an offer. I think they were his only Division I offer. They were certainly his only like power conference Division I offer. And it was almost a throwaway thing at the end of the recruiting period. They had some money, some scholarship for him, and they gave it to him. And then he explodes at the college level. So even somebody like that, where we're evaluating, and this goes back to the Jordan Walker conversation because of how young he is, we don't know when these guys are actually going to emerge as whoever they're going to be.
And that's a good point. In drafting these college guys, I feel like you know a lot more about them because of that. You know, you get to see them develop as they get a bit older rather than, you know, just taking a chance on an 18-year-old. And if they're not in one of those academies and they just go to some random high school, I feel like you almost don't know a lot about them. And you're just looking at tools and traits rather than, you know, established numbers.
100%. With NIL stuff and agents getting more involved, I would think it's going to be even better for them because there's going to be agents are obviously going to get as much information out about their guys moving forward. One more break. We'll come back. Jen Cease, who's going to be hosting City Spotlight, she's going to be in here. We're going to find out from her what she's got coming up on the program tonight. And we'll get out of here for the evening coming up. Don't go anywhere. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line, a Strike Zone Hour coming up, rolling on right here on KMOX.
Now, back to the Strike Zone, presented by Graybar on the voice of the Cardinals, 104.1 FM, KMOX.
It is a Strike Zone Hour of a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Just a couple minutes left in this program, but don't go anywhere. City Spotlight coming up this evening from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock. Jen Cease hosting as she does a great job, and she is in with us right now to tell us a little bit about what's going on the show tonight. Hey, Jen.
Yeah, good evening. A packed show, actually. Lutz Fahnenstiel is going to join us right off the top, talk a little bit. So Tom Ackerman's not the only one that gets to talk to Lutz. I get to talk to Lutz. So we'll have him first, and then we'll hear from Tomas Ostrak, who's our player profile. Recorded that with him yesterday. Dax McCarty from Apple MLS Season Pass will join us. You see him everywhere. He does all the pregame analysis. He's on MLS 360 and the roundup and the wrap-up and all those things. So he'll be at the bottom of the hour. And then Dale Schille will kind of round out the hour with us to talk about. He was there at LAFC and, you know, had a bird's-eye view to the tie that kind of feels like a loss.
Yeah, totally feels like a loss. I was the bad luck charm on that one, by the way, because I literally turned that game on about 15 seconds before the equalizing goal was scored.
Oh.
I didn't watch a second of it and then turned it on, and I'm watching Belonga go do his thing.
You watch one heck of a run, though.
I felt bad. I turned it on, and then very shortly thereafter turned it. I let the game finish off, and they were just about done anyways, but turned it off. Maybe I'm wrong on this. It's a long season. It feels like you have to turn that into something. At least that was a point. They've not gotten a point in a while. You have to build off of that now. They are at the point in the season where if you just keep coming up with ties or you keep or have losses, like that's it's going to be critical mass. So this is you scored two goals at LAFC.
Yeah.
That without everything else that went on.
You had the lead twice.
Right. That's a good day. Go turn that into something.
Right, exactly. Take off. Also, you scored on LAFC, which City had never done. Scored first, scored twice. Build on that and bring it to the Sounders. Hard place to play. It's turf. It's Lumen Field. Sounders fans are very energetic. It's not an easy place to play, but maybe they're missing Jordan Morris. That could help St. Louis City, but you definitely need to build on that and at least take one. And, man, could you do things if you take take all three.
You're going to be there this weekend.
I am going to be there. Yeah. Dale Schilly's on St. Louis City Academy duty, so I'll be there with Joey Zanaboni, and pregame starts at 9 p.m. on Y98.
How much fun is that for you when you get the opportunity to do the analyst work?
You know, it's fun, a little scary too, because you have to remember just tell what you see, because usually I'm busy just with other duties, but it is fun to kind of turn your brain on and also enjoy the game and enjoy what's happening, and then try to see and figure out what's going on in the time. So it's a good time.
Awesome. Well, we'll be listening. That's Jen C. She's got City Spotlight coming up just after the 8 o'clock news. I will talk with you tomorrow for Cardinals baseball. Cardinals are opening up a weekend series against the New York Mets. Sonny Gray going to be on the mound tomorrow night. 7:15 first pitch, coverage at 6:20. We've got Redbird Rush Hour tomorrow night at 5 o'clock. So look forward to talking to you then. Thanks so much for being tuned in to a Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX.